The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Rock, sport and talk.
Radio City Talk.
Joined by former Reds player David Thompson, who's going to do his Match of My Life a little bit later. Morning to you, David.
Morning. How are you?
Let's talk Champions League. Yeah, great, thanks. I think lots of Reds walking around with a smile on their face at the moment. All for one reason, but actually lots of different points of the weekend have produced that smile, haven't they?
Unbelievable. I was ultra confident going into the game. I never felt like we were ever going to lose it, but you never know in a final, and Spurs are a top team. You know, they can give anyone a game on a day, and, you know, it wasn't a great performance for us, but it was all about the result. I mean, it was nice to hear Klopp wasn't bothered about the performance. He just wanted to win and win at all costs, and that's what we did.
Mm. When you score that early in a game, I mean, sometimes people say you can score too early. As a player, do you ever think that way or not? Or is that just a nonsense created by football fans?
No, it's not a myth, because sometimes you set up, you're prepared all week for different scenarios, or even our scenario. And then to score that early, or even to concede that early, the game plan sort of half goes out the window. You've got to change on the spot, and you can be looking over at the manager for him to try and give you some clues, but ultimately it's up to the players to try and react on the spot.
Do you have a backup plan then? Or are you literally going, oh, what's he want us to do now? Or is Jordan Henderson feeding something through? Or how does that work?
I think what happened there, because there was a game plan, and the game plan was different from what Liverpool normally play, because normally they have the high-pressing game, and I never saw that. And I think that was to do with the heat in the stadium, 30 degrees. If you go all gung-ho, like, you know, all guns blazing, you'd be tired after 30 minutes. And that would allow the opposition to come back into the game. And I thought it was a great game plan from Liverpool and executed perfectly.
Ultimately, you're not really bothered how you play as long as you win, are you? I mean, no one looks back to 1978, which was an awful final, 1981, and goes, do you remember that? They just go, oh, do you remember Phil Thompson lifting the cup in Paris? That's what it's about.
Absolutely, and that's what you're remembered for. Nobody remembers runners-up. It's all about just getting the job done. You don't play well in finals, you just win finals. You do what you need to do. And last year was an example of that. Real Madrid didn't play very well for the first 85 minutes. They did what they had to do. Ramos did what he had to do. You know, he injured our star player. Got them off the pitch, and then their tails were up then, and that's when they started to dominate possession. So you've just got to do what you've got to do to win the game. It's win at all costs, because it's a final, and that's where you're writing your legacy, you're writing the club's history. And, you know, that moment with Jordan Henderson at the end, that filled me up.
I'm intrigued to know about the pressures on footballers, and you've experienced it, and we'll perhaps talk more about it in Match of My Life, but let's just focus on Jordan Henderson, because talk about being in the pressure pot of taking the mantle off Steven Gerrard and being the captain, and then being consistently put down by certain sections of fans, but somehow coming through all that over several years to reach that moment. You can't help but that almost makes you well up thinking about the journey he's been on together.
Absolutely. You know, he wasn't a star player at Sunderland. He was a great player with loads of potential. He struggled at the first season, maybe first year and a half at Liverpool. They put him in the right position and he started to excel. I think Jordan Henderson, when he's 100% fit, and I mean 100% fit, not carrying any injuries, and he's had games under his belt, I think he's an exceptional player, played in the right position. I don't think he is a number six. I think he's, you know, you've got to get him using his energy, maybe a number eight, up and down type of player. He can pass. I think when he went into the number six role, he tried to emulate the likes of Xabi Alonso by playing sideways and back, and you know, then all of a sudden trying to hit these killer passes like him and Gerrard did. I think he should have just stuck to his own game. But when he's gone into the number eight role, he's thrived. He's a proper player, and you know, he's come in to captain the club, and he's had big boots to fill, absolutely big boots to fill. And I'm sure he would have felt a little bit intimidated by that, but I think all that emotion, all that insecurity just went away when he lifted that European Cup.
Yeah, because that image of him roaring, you know, his teeth, it almost didn't look like Jordan Henderson. It looked like someone who'd unleashed some sort of different being. It was a wonderful moment of exposure.
Absolutely, and I think he played well in the final last year. He worked hard. I think he's a top player. A lot of our fans have given him a lot of criticism over the years, and You know, I always think he does a great job for the team. He's a selfless player. He plays out of position. He's a bit like James Milner. He plays out of position and just gets on with it and does a really good job. But that moment when he lifted the cup and then after that when he went and hugged his dad, I think that was all like, you know, he finally arrived. He's now gone down in history. He'll be there next to the club in years, hundreds of years.
He's next to those iconic figures who've lifted it before. I mentioned Phil Thompson, Stephen Gerrard. He's one
he's
of
in
those
good company.
Now, isn't he?
He's an immortal now. He's
well,
an
he absolute, is really,
he's
isn't
absolutely
he?
An immortal. And when you think about it, right, just to be a professional footballer is hard enough. Then just to play the elite level Premier League is even harder. And then to go on and lift the European Cup, which is one of the hardest it's the hardest competition in world football. I know Man City are saying they've won the Premier League. They think that the Premier League is probably a better standard than European football. I disagree with that completely. I think to win the European Cup, you are an elite, elite footballer. And, you know, there's not many people get on to do that. And Jordan Henderson has just put himself up there with some unbelievable players, unbelievable, iconic players. And he's just immortalised himself in LFC.
And to throw into that, in terms of mental toughness, if you go back to him being subbed at Man United when he was distraught, him being left out at Barcelona away, and then him playing against Barcelona at home and literally being the driving force for that 4-0 win.
Yeah,
I mean, that's different class.
And
in
the thing is,
he
started off in the number 8 role there, and if he would have been playing number 6 that day, you wouldn't have seen him in that position to get the first goal when he was breaking through and the ball falls to Origi. That was because of a great run from Jordan Henderson, you know, a driving run right at the heart of their defence. And that signalled the intent. And that's what you've got to do. You start off on the right foot, and I think the team just followed after that. So he led by example. Stevie G used to rally the troops. If everybody was having a bad game, Stevie G would just go in, he'd smash someone, he'd get a yellow card, or he'd do an amazing cross-field pass or a through ball. He'd get the lads... you know, he'd inspire the lads that way.
Get the tails up, energised, yeah.
Absolutely, and I think that run by Henderson, and then the ball breaks for Origi, and he puts it in the back of the net, 1-0, so early on. You know, everyone just thought, you know what, we can do this.
Do you think there's a different feeling as an ex-Liverpool player? I'm not suggesting it's any more than, you know, a fan, because the fans have got an association with the club, which is a huge bond. But is there a different emotional feeling as someone who's played for the club to watch that happen at the weekend?
Yeah, I was very emotional watching that the weekend. I'd love to have experienced it as a player. That was one of the...
Is that the thing? Is that the...
I think it's... Yeah, I think I was overcome with emotion because it's also what you've missed out on. You know, it's... especially, you know, what we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but as a footballer, you have your dreams and your aspirations and, you know, your tick box. And basically, to watch Jordan Henderson realising, and all them players realising your dreams and aspirations, something that you've missed out on, is like... It's very emotional, but also it's a very proud moment for me.
Yeah, because you have played your part or your small bit within the bigger jigsaw of what is such an iconic footballing beast.
Yeah, I mean, I owe Liverpool a lot. It put me on the map, and yeah. I'll forever be grateful to Liverpool Football Club, and you know, it's the team that I follow and support
and adore. And when you see the crowds that turn out, because you know how many people support around the world, but when you see those images of the homecoming and the people hanging off the lampposts and the adoration, it literally brings it to the fore so much more.
Well, I couldn't get my head around it. I think the population of Liverpool is 700,000, but yet there was 750,000 on the streets. So people, that's near enough everyone coming in and inundating the city. Mm. I just think that support, it wouldn't happen anywhere else in the world. I see Man City, you know, they must have had maybe 50,000, 100,000 turn out to welcome them after winning the Premier League. We had 750,000 on the streets. You couldn't move. It was like a sea of red. It's just absolutely incredible. And that's what it means, Liverpool Football Club. And also, you can see where that pressure's come from over the last few years. And you can see why there was so much pressure on us in the final last year.
Well, I watched some of the victory parade that Madrid held last year, and obviously they had good numbers there, but it didn't seem like they were celebrating it in the same way that we celebrated it this year. And that's obviously because we feel that Liverpool is on this curve of resurgence and could well I don't say dominate, but be up there amongst the very best for a few years now.
Well, I've got every faith and confidence, and everything points to the fact that Liverpool FC will only get stronger, and Tottenham will as well. Mm. You know, they'll get stronger. They'll benefit from this run in the Champions League. But teams in the Premier League, the top teams, the elite teams, are only going to get stronger, and I can see us dominating European football for a long time to come.
Match of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.
Today's Match of My Life guest is a man who appeared on the Liverpool stage at a young age, a local lad who's supported them throughout his life and achieved some of those dreams, perhaps the dreams that we would all hope for, touching the Anfield sign and just stepping on the turf, David Thompson. David, let's just talk about that. Was that the ambition as a very young guy growing up? Was it all about Liverpool? You're an obsessive?
Absolutely. I think, all my family were Evertonians when I was a kid. So up until about 8 or 9, I was an Evertonian. And then, when I signed for Liverpool, and the way they look after you, the way they nurture you, it was all about, the dream was just to step onto the Anfield turf and try and become a footballer.
9 years old, you were into the academy at that stage, were you? So you knew you had a raw talent. It was quite obvious, was it?
Yeah, it was. I was. I think I was just about to sign for Tranmere, actually, before I got the invitation from Hugh McCauley to come to the Vernon Sangster and start training there. And I think it quickly becomes evident, you know, when you're training with an elite group of local lads, footballers, and, you know, you quickly rise into the top. I think myself and Jamie Carragher, and Jamie Cassidy were always, you know, one of the best players, and that kept going on season after season, and then all of a sudden you're starting to think, you know what, there's a realisation here that I could actually be a professional footballer, and you know, it was like a Franny Scully moment that.
Brilliant. Who were some of those names? You mentioned Jamie Carragher. Mm. So you were in the same sort of class of,
yeah.
Who?
Well, it was the season we won the FA Youth Cup. We had some good players, some really good players, and I think you've got to be lucky and mentally strong to make the grade and get through. There was some good players there. Weasley, you know, were talented enough to go on and play Premier League, but, you know, for injuries at crucial times in the career, and, you know, maybe not having the mental toughness to be able to come back from that, it cost them.
So quality, mentality, luck, as you say, it all has to add up for you, doesn't it?
I think, you know, I'd say mentality and luck plays a huge part over talent. You know, you can have all the talent in the world, but Liverpool Football Club's an institution, and you get told how to play football, you get taught how to play football, and you know it inside out. At the end of the day, it's about applying yourself, and they will not tolerate if you're not got the right application.
But we should remember, not everyone makes it through from the academy. In fact, a very small percentage at the end of the day, the cream, actually make it over that line. But you were in quite a unique group, weren't you? So Carragher, Owen, yourself.
And Stevie,
Stevie as well. So you were in a crop. I don't want to compare it to sort of United's.
Well, before that, you had Don Matteo coming through, you had Robbie Fowler, and then Stevie Mack. And I think there's a picture of a group of us, you know, seven of us there. And you just think to yourself, you know, that's for Liverpool Football Club to produce that quality of player. You know, most of them players went on to lift European Cups. It's absolutely ridiculous.
What was it down to in large part? I mean, you mentioned Hughie McCauley. Is it great upbringing? Is it the coaching environment? Is it the desire from local people to go that step further? Because the names we're talking about are intrinsically linked to the area, aren't they?
Well, absolutely. I think the quality is out there. But in particular, there was a hunger and desire amongst, and you know, you could see it amongst that. That was a running theme amongst a lot of us, really. Mm. It meant everything. I remember, you know, watching Stevie G on the TV last year talking about, you know, coaching the youngsters. I think he was doing an interview for BT Sport. And you've got to be obsessive. It's got to, you've got to go in and want to be the best player in training every day. And if you're not the best player in training, as you're driving home, you've got to think about how you're going to be the best player. How can you improve the next day? How can you be noticed? How can you get the attention? Especially when you're playing for a youth team or a reserve team or under 23 team. I was always, my ambition was always to try and get the attention of the manager. I mean, Melwood was a bit different because all our games were being played, all the reserve games and warm-up games, youth games, were always played at Melwood. And the manager's office always looked out onto the pitches, so you always knew there was a chance the manager was watching you. So you're always stepping up your game. You're always trying to do something to be noticed. Possibly a bit too much at times, but, you know, even if it was just kick someone, get a yellow card, show how passionate, how much it meant to you, and that's... You know, that was a running theme between all them players there, Stevie Mack, Robbie Fowler, Don Matteo, Cadder, Stevie G, Michael Owen.
All trying to get noticed.
All trying to be noticed, all trying to show that obsession. And it has got to hurt. You know, if you get criticised, if you get singled out in a game because you've not done so well, it's got to hurt. If someone played better than me, it would hurt me. I'd go home and I'd be very upset about it. You know, I wouldn't cry my eyes out, but it would hurt. It'd be like someone's punched me in the stomach. It'd mean that much, and I think... Well, you're never going to have that one up on me again, ever again. I'll make sure that I'll be the best in the team the next game.
Self-critical. So as someone who wins the FA Youth Cup, and you obviously feel that's a great platform, and you're around those training environments, and you know the manager's about, so, you know, Roy Evans is there. Do you remember some of those early sort of conversations with Roy, or whether you're thinking, has he noticed me?
You don't get them conversations where, you know, he never turn around and say to you, you've got a chance to be in the first team. Yeah. They always leave it to yourself. You know, all of a sudden, what happens is you'll be called into training with the first team. And, you know, not saying you start to shine, but at 17, 18 years of age when you're training with the first team, and you're not... you know, you're holding your own, you're doing all right, and you're getting golden nuggets from most of them players, and you're picking it up, you're taking it on board. You start to become, you know, what your environment is, and you start to act and behave like a first-team footballer, and that's when you start to believe.
Always a midfielder?
Always a midfielder. I was a centre-midder. Yeah. I was never a right-sided midfielder. I always played centre-mid, and I knew the game inside out in centre-mid, and then obviously when Julio came, I'd always excelled in centre mid, you know, whether it be the six or even I could play number 10. I was always like a bit like a Gigi, you know, a Wijnaldum type player. And then to get put out on the right hand side when Julio came, I think it really did affect my game. It stopped me being able to excel to the level I wanted to. It felt like my legs had been cut off and my freedom had been cut off a little bit.
Because, of course, Carragher started his first game in centre midfield, didn't he? Could have scuppered your centre midfield hopes. He scored, didn't he, on his debut at Anfield?
Yeah, he did, actually.
His full debut from centre midfield.
Yeah, he did.
So you're probably thinking, why is he there?
Yeah, he did. The thing with Carragher, he was, I'd say, at that age as well, it's about maturity, and I'd say definitely Carragher was more streetwise and more mature than me at the time. I think I only started shaving about 23, 24, you know, in terms of physical development. So we probably, you know, you'd have them levels and times where you're progressing faster than other people. And Carragher deserved his time and deserved to make his debut at that time. I wasn't far off. I wasn't far behind. But yeah, he definitely deserved it.
He always tells the story about how Patrick Berger had the runs or something. So he got a call early in the morning saying you're playing in the middle. How did you get your debut? What are the emotions that surround that moment?
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, actually, because I remember my full debut being against Villa, and you've just mentioned Patrick Berger there. And I'd been doing really well in the reserves, and I'd been scoring goals, making assists, and, you know, basically standing out. I'd got the manager's attention, and I knew that it was, you know, I knew I was training with the first team and doing okay. I knew it wasn't far away. And Villa away, I got the shout about an hour before, and they dropped Paddy for me. And the game didn't go too well. I think Villa beat us, and Stan Collymore was playing for Villa that day. I managed to set one up, but I didn't play very well. I was caught off guard, probably a little bit nervous and frightened of making mistakes. But then I read an interview in the paper about six or 7 weeks afterwards, and someone said to it was an interview with Paddy, and someone said to him, "What's the lowest point of your career?" And he said, "Getting dropped for a reserve." And I thought to myself, "Do you know what? That's so disrespectful. You know, I might be a reserve, but I've deserved my chance, and you deserve to be dropped because you wasn't pulling your weight." And you know, it's little things like that. You can go backwards or you can take them on. You can use criticism like that to spur you on and make you, you know, further your development. And that's what I did.
Well, it just shows how low you can get when you've been dropped as well, doesn't it? If you treat it that seriously, and if you, yeah. It goes back to what you were saying, if it's going to hurt you, it should really drive you in the right direction.
Yeah, I think Patrick got dropped again, and he showed a bad attitude when... and he didn't have a bad attitude, Patrick. You know, he had a great attitude. He was always hardworking in training. And... yeah, we came on against United and he wasn't bothered. I think he came on for the last 15 minutes or something. He didn't try a leg. And that was him. He was disgusted that he didn't start the game, I think.
You were always willing to say your piece, weren't you? You were never shy, were you?
No, it definitely...
Did that help or hinder
no,
you?
No, it hindered me at that time because obviously I wasn't mature enough to or articulate right. enough to be able to back what I was trying to express. And... what I was always trying to express was a desire to do well and to progress and be a first team player. And at times, you know, my petulance got the better of me. And
One of those out for us.
Well, I remember, I think I got sent off. I got sent off against Leeds in a reserve game. Mm. And obviously Julier was there. The manager wasn't happy about that. So he gave me a ticking off then. And then about 3 weeks later, I got sent off again, a Blackburn away, and it was only in a reserve game, but I was playing well, and I was frustrated because Phil Thompson was trying to guide me too much from the side, and he was telling me where to go, and felt like he was trying to play my game and not allow me to express myself. Next thing, I got sent off for a 2-footer tackle or something, and which wasn't like me. And at half time or after the game, I could hear Julier was in the showers. And he was commenting and making these... I was obviously talking about me. He was upset with me. And I was frustrated, but I remember just standing up and just kicking an empty bottle of Lucozade. I think it was empty or had a little bit of Lucozade in it. And I've kicked it. Now, the timing was impeccable because Gerrard came out the showers and it hit him right in the chest. And he just looked at me straight away and he went, "That is it. You are finished. You are finished." And that was... you know, that was a contributing factor. I wasn't finished yet. He gave me a few chances after that, but petulance and a little bit of frustration. I was mouthy and I was argumentative, but it was always for the right reasons. It was never just to be argumentative for the sake of it. It was always trying to improve or try to express a frustration that I couldn't articulate out. And I think... You know, I was petulant in the decision to leave Liverpool as well at the time.
Match of My Life guest today, David Thompson. His Liverpool journey continues in a moment.
Match of My Life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.
David Thompson, today's guest on Match of My Life. So Roy Evans there, Gerard Houllier comes in, and very different styles, people, very different ideas on the football club. And in some ways, you look at the way Liverpool transformed itself, and it was the right thing under Gerard Houllier, and that was proven with the cups that were won in 2001, etc. But for certain individuals like yourself, maybe you felt it a little bit harsher, David.
Yeah, we were just talking about it before. It's man management skills, and I think Gerard was okay man management. He's not in the Klopp mould. He was never in that mould. But all the managers always knew how to get the best out of me, and I think Roy Evans knew how to handle me. Steve Highway, Sammy Lee, you know, it was a bit of tough love, but also an arm round the shoulder when you needed it, because every player loves an arm round the shoulder. I think that's how you get the best out of them. But I think when Gerrard came in, he was impressed with my ability for sure. I know he was, because he wouldn't have brought me into the first team or even around the first team. He knew what I could do. But sometimes he just went about things the wrong way, or I felt like he was going about things the wrong way. And... yeah, I was petulant. I mean, I would pull faces if he brought me off after an hour or 70 minutes, no matter how well I was playing, even if I was man of the match. You know, 70 minutes come, I was looking over and I knew he was going to take me off, and he would take me off. Now, I wasn't used to that. That never happened to me before. I was always used to being one of the better players in all the teams I played for and appreciating that. And at that time, you know, we wasn't used to continental management. For someone to come in and say, "Do you know what, he's only 18. He's done an hour, he's done 70 minutes there. Get him off the pitch now, let's save his legs," you know, that type of thing. I wasn't mature enough to take that on board. I just used to think, well, normally, whoever's not doing too good on the day normally gets brought off first, and that was me. I was taking it the wrong way. So, you know, I remember once he said to me, you've got to stop pulling faces every time I pull you off. And I think, well, what have I got to be? Happy that you're going to bring me off the pitch? And I used to take that the wrong way, you know. It was
you were just trying to express the fact that you wanted to stay on the pitch.
Yeah. He wants to come off the pitch at Anfield, especially when you're playing well. So, yeah, it was just, you know, you're talking about man management styles, but I took that one the wrong way.
Is there nothing like the feeling of playing at Anfield or being in front of the cop when it's in
It's actually quite scary. It can be quite daunting at times. I mean, sometimes, you know, you walk out there and, I mean, I used to say to Cara, the hair's on the back of my neck, I'm standing up here. And, you know, we'd look at each other.
You said that in the tunnel, and it was quite
No, when you get out on the pitch and actually you sing, the cop's singing or the whole stadium singing, you never walk alone. I mean, that's a moment you've got to pinch yourself. You know, you actually got to pinch yourself. I'd look at Cara, even Michael Owen, and say, you know, how did we get here? Do you know what I mean? How did we get here? This is, and then you've got to go out and perform.
Which is the toughest bit.
Well, it is the toughest bit, but you know what? That's the easiest bit because that's the bit where it just comes natural. And as I say before, we grew up in a 4-4-2 formation. We were institutionalised. I knew that system inside out. I knew where the left back should be. I knew where the centre forward should be. I knew where we needed to be with and without the ball. It was an institutionalised system and you know, one I love and one I think should be brought back.
Did you have a support mechanism in the ground off the field? Was there certain family members that were always there? Was there something that gave you
always
confidence?
Always me, mum and dad and you know, obviously my girlfriend at the time who became my wife, she was there. Yeah, the home and away, they used to come. And you draw a lot of inspiration from that. But just knowing that your friends and family are in there, it gives you a huge boost. And you know, it really is. You know, to play for Liverpool Football Club, it is a dream come true.
Right, you're in a team with Steven Gerrard. Is it the 1999 season where you're enjoying your best run, really?
Yeah.
And you're involved in Steven's first goal.
Yeah.
Looking back now, you go, oh yeah, well he's one of the best ever. Mm-hmm. Did you know at the time? And was
no,
it obvious?
Listen, we always knew he was a great player. He was a good lad. He was we knew he was a top player. He had loads of potential. But at that time, he was just like, you know, he was probably in amongst us, and you know, you wouldn't have cherry picked him to say he was going to have this unbelievable career. Mm. What happened was, obviously, we played in that game. He was amazing in that game.
That's the Sheffield Wednesday game.
He really
isn't
was,
it?
Yeah. You know, myself and Danny Murphy, we were on the score sheet. Sammy Hoopy was on the score sheet as well. But that was a game where I actually felt I was just playing with my mates in the park that day. You know, it was one of my it was a standout moment for me because I think that one that catapulted me to, you know, where fans could appreciate that I was a Liverpool footballer then and I'd arrived. I actually felt I'd arrived then. But that was the game where Stevie got his goal as well and launched his career. What I was saying before is Stevie went on to fulfil major potential. What helped him was his physical maturity. He was only a skinny lad at the time, you know, he was quick, but he was only a skinny lad. And then, you know, within, I'd say, two seasons, you know, the pitches were too small for the lad. You know, he was so quick, he was so strong. He could hit the ball from one side of the pitch to the other, side foot. I've never seen anyone side foot a ball as hard in my life. But also then he became very aggressive. He was already a very ultra-confident lad where sometimes you would think it's borderline arrogance. It's not. It was just ultra-confidence. He knew. He knew he was going to be that good. He felt he was having impacts in games. And, you know, the career that he went on to have, absolutely unbelievable, very well deserved. And that's a lad who was obsessed with being the best.
He was.
He was.
He had that bit extra than yourself? Mentally or?
No, I don't think so. I just think it is the opportunities he had as well to go on. And I remember, this is funny, this is a funny story. I remember playing against Cara when he played for Bootle Boys, and I think I played for Whittle School Boys. I don't know, it must have been 12 or 13 at the time. Cara scored two, I scored one. And I remember, he was brilliant that day, Cara. And I remember my dad talking about him to my brothers the next day or that evening. I overheard him, and my dad said that Bootle Boys had a great player today, a lad called Jamie Carragher. And my brothers, I'm sure one of them asked him, is he better than our David? And it was like, oh, he's a good player. Now, just for him to even say, you know, put me in the same bracket, not hold me above him, that stuck with me. And I was thinking, that's like, you know, I'm going to show you. I'll show, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? I'll show my dad. I'll show Cara, you know. It was one of them moments. So yeah, you know, when you talk about being obsession about being the best, I think we all had it to certain degrees. But Stevie G had that potential and also the timing to be that physically dynamic really helped him. Mm. You know, when you talk about, did we know which players were going to go on and make it and be the best? We knew Michael Owen was going to be special, but he was demonstrating the fact that he was so quick and so and could finish. He was so clinical. I mean, you just knew that lad was going places. With Stevie G, it was probably a little bit slower. Probably only seen that when he was about 18, 19, 20. You know, when he starts fulfilling his potential, he's scoring goals in you know, UEFA Cup finals, FA Cup finals. That's, you know, quality, absolute quality.
Got to have that relentless personal drive. Let's get on to your favourite games. So there are some that stand out for you. So we'll talk about this Palace game. So Liverpool Palace. This is in, is it 1998 or 99?
It's 98, 99. It was when Macca was still there, Stevie
right.
Mack.
Okay.
You know, when you talk about games in my life, I don't have particular games where I look back on and say, yeah, I was brilliant that day. Most of the times I was brilliant. but, you know, certain games, the very significant games for me was the Sheffield Wednesday game, obviously, because, you know, that was a game I really enjoyed, scored goals. But this Crystal Palace game was one where I got my first goal. And I came on a sub, actually, with about 30 minutes to go, 25 minutes to go. And I was unlucky not to start, but I was glad I didn't start because I'd gone out on the Wednesday with my girlfriend to a karaoke bar. And I was telling the kids this story the other day. And
it's your daughter laughing yeah, next year.
little bit worse for wear, but I didn't expect to be in and around right. the first team at this time. So I got to a karaoke bar, come out, and I've kicked a post that had a traffic cone on it. Underneath it was a metal bar or post, whatever it was. I end up breaking my foot. So when I goes into training the next day, I think, I can't report this. I'm just going to have to go out, train. And I've asked Cara to try and smash me just so I could pretend that I've broke my foot in a tackle and go and get some treatment on it. But as I'm going out to train, and Ronnie Moran says to me, keep yourself handy the weekend, Sully said you could be playing. I just thought to myself, oh, do you know what? What am I going to do now? My foot. I know I've broke my foot. I felt it's broke. It's like a balloon, you know what I mean? It looks like a Callaway driver. So I just said to Callaway, just ease off. Just don't tackle me today. Just let's see how it goes. Unfortunately, Cavani's work permit came through, so he was managed. He was okay to play. And I had an injection before the game just to try and, you know, just in case I needed it. But it had wore off at half-time. So by the time the gaffer came to put me on, my foot was absolutely killing me. And I didn't know what I was going to do, really. So I've limped on, and within about 2 minutes, Mac has got the ball down the wing. I've just run into the box. The ball's come in, and I've scored the winner. Now, we needed that goal to put us back into the Champions League places. And so I've come on, scored the goal. I've got a broken foot. And then after that, Jamie Redknapp's asked me to go and start taking the corners. I swear, I limped over there. I couldn't even get the ball into the box. That's how bad it was. And fortunately, we were coming to the end of the season, so I managed to, you know, just get away with it. Well, that sticks out in my mind. That's a funny moment.
Let's have a listen to it. Put those headphones on. This is that goal.
Harkness plays a 1-2 with McManaman. Then Harkness will curl it towards the far post. Ince climbs. Chance for Leonardson, and he buries it. Oyvind Leonardson just popped up there, the right man in the right place as the cross came in from Harkness. Ince was the player putting the Palace defence under pressure. It suddenly fell kindly for Leonardson, got it down on his right thigh and volleyed it conclusively past Kevin Miller from the corner of the six-yard box. McManaman now, right edge of the penalty area, curls it in, oh, it's there! And it's little David Thompson who stuck out an outstretched left leg. Little Thompson got in there. His first senior goal for Liverpool, and what a time to score it. It perhaps is going to take them on to 3 points. Ball curled in beautifully by McManaman from the right-hand side, and little Thompson, well, the legs aren't the longest, but he somehow stuck out that long left leg and turned it past Miller, and with 5 minutes left, it's Liverpool 2, Crystal Palace 1.
Kev Keating seems to have an obsession with your height there, doesn't he? Little David Thompson.
You want to give me a complex after that?
Fantastic, yeah, but, though, isn't it? I mean, even me listening to that, it gives you a little bit of a buzz.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we needed to win to stay in the Champions League place. I think it was only first and second then, so that must have elevated us back into second place. Man United would have been first. But great ball from Stevie Mack. You know, hell of a player, one of the best I've ever played with. Put the ball on a plate for me, really. And, you know, he'd done that for many players. He'd done it for Robbie for a number of years. Then he went and did it for Zidane and Figo and Ronaldo. And
it's not bad, is
absolutely
it?
Absolutely amazing player.
Look, time's catching up on us. Leaving Liverpool's the hardest thing. And actually, gosh, it's a longer story than the time we've got. But actually, for you, I think you look back now and probably go, this didn't end the right way.
It definitely didn't end the right way. You know, really, if I'd have stuck it out and maybe, you know, took a lot more on board from the coaches. I was very petulant. I knew that I could play and I knew that I deserved to be playing for Liverpool Football Club. And I just thought it was one of them moments where I had a choice to make, where I could go and prove myself that I was, you know, good enough to play this type of football or play in a team that plays this type of football, or stay and fight. And I didn't feel like I was being appreciated enough. You know, I felt like they were always fighting against me. So I thought, I'll show you, I'll go wherever. I wasn't bothered where I went, as long as I got a platform to go and play football and prove myself. And that's what I did, because, you know, I was coming back up the league. I was coming back up to, you know, a top four team. And ultimately, that's what would have happened if I hadn't got injured.
David Thompson, thank you very much indeed. It's a wonderful memory shared. Fantastic match of my life, David Thompson.